everyone. Thank you so much for tuning into Advertising Week's Great Minds, People and Culture podcast. I'm your host, Brenna Kinsey, Executive Vice President of Advertising Week and Emerald. On today's episode, we're speaking to Brooke Schnittman. Brooke is the founder of Coaching with Brooke, an ADHD and executive function coaching company for students and adults ages from 8 to 80. Brooke has dedicated her career to helping thousands of people with ADHD for 20 years who are meeting with chaos, frustration, and shame by providing them the tools and accountability to focus their attention and thrive. Brooke's ultimate goal is to positively impact 10 million more individuals with ADHD in the next 5 years. People who work with Brooke and her team gauge success by creating guilt-free time for things they love, controlling ADHD chaos, making career improvements based on strengths, fostering positive relationships, intentional productivity, improving academics, and self-accountability. Hey, Brooke. Thank you for being here and welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Of course, my pleasure. Today we're going to talk about ADHD in adults and how it manifests itself in the workplace. My first question for you is, we hear about ADHD in children all the time. How is it different or maybe the same in adults? And what are the common challenges faced in adulthood when you are diagnosed with ADHD?
Yeah, absolutely. So people rediscover, even those who have been diagnosed as a child, that they have ADHD as an adult because there's so many new and unmanaged things that we've never discovered before, like taxes, relationships, managing a household, parenting. So that takes a lot of executive function, and people with ADHD have executive dysfunction. So for girls, especially since they're more the inattentive type ADHD, it very often goes undiagnosed as a child. But going into adulthood, it manifests and can be exacerbated. The symptoms of ADHD can be exacerbated and it could be harder to cope because we don't know how to. Also, when you're a child, you have your parents usually and your teachers who act as your executive function. But as an adult, you're pretty much on your own unless you're living with your parents and they're parenting you still. So that's why many times women with ADHD get diagnosed later in life. Now, they're moving away from classifying ADHD inattentive or ADHD hyperactive or ADHD combined type because when you go into adulthood, the symptoms can change. So very often the diagnosis can change as well. It's still ADHD, but maybe you're not as hyperactive as you were when you were a child. Maybe you can sit still, but you have racing thoughts internally. So it can change throughout the lifespan of an ADHDer.
In the context of the workplace, what specific struggles do adults with ADHD often encounter? And what does that look like in the workplace? How can I know if I have ADHD as an adult?
So everyone's different with ADHD. So I can't make a blanket statement that it's a one size fits all, like this is what it looks like. But very often what I hear and I've experienced in the workplace is we need an area of either the office or a private office where we can really not get distracted. So whether it be a place where you can look outward away from people and perhaps put on headphones so you're not distracted by interruptions, a desk where you could stand up, sit down, move around, a boss that can help you prioritize tasks so you know which one is the most important, accountability with your boss or your colleagues. So for someone who has ADHD, perhaps they're not turning in things on time or they're waiting until the last minute to get something done, like a longer task, something that involves multiple steps. Perhaps they're, getting out of their seat multiple times. Perhaps they're prioritizing the wrong things or missing steps of an item that the boss needs. Perhaps they're the one with the creative ideas. And if they're too task-based, that might be boring and draining for them. So that is some of the ways that ADHD can manifest in adults in the workplace.
You mentioned boss a few times when you were talking about how ADHD manifests in the workplace. As an employer, what are some of the ways that we could open the door for that conversation with an employee so that there's no stigma around it, or it's not associated with something that a child would have, but maybe not an adult, especially as it relates to the workplace and professional environment?
Yeah, I love how you asked that question. So I think training on mental health, bringing in an expert who can share what neurodivergence looks like, and kind of just opening up for the conversation about themselves as the boss, and being vulnerable and saying, listen, like, I'm good at these things, but not so good at these things. So these are my strengths, but we all have weaknesses. Would love if we can take some personality assessments or share ways that work best for us, and then maybe put ourselves on teams that complement each other. So there's different team styles, right? Like there's the organizer, there's the note taker, there's the active person. So the more information the employer can grab on the employee and share with the employee, I think will make it feel a little bit healthier and more open and inclusive.
We talked about missing deadlines or maybe starting things at the last minute. What are some of the positive attributes that someone with ADHD would have that they could harness in a leadership role or even as an individual contributor?
Very often with ADHD, we get excited by problem solving, by coming up with creative ideas. So bring a problem to the workforce that needs to be solved. And I know that I, along with many of my clients, would be interested in trying to come up with a solution for it. We might not be able to explain how we got to that solution, but we have a solution for it, and it's likely a very good solution. So that's one thing. Creating vision and expansion in a company, not being okay with like the status quo. So an individual with ADHD is creating very often. So let them create, let them brainstorm, let them come up with new and exciting ideas or learning new things because they love to learn. And you know, this, again, not a one size fits all, but very often this is what I'm seeing in adults with ADHD that we can do to support them. And also the biggest thing is like, ask the person, where do you thrive? What are your strengths? Perhaps take a test like a predictive index or a Colby and find out where their leadership skills are and where they can thrive, because we're so much more productive when we're doing the things that we love and not the things that we hate and our weaknesses are. So don't you want people to maximize their work time by leaning into their strengths and the things that they actually enjoy?
Absolutely. I love that. You know, you mentioned being able to problem solve, expand, and get creative. Are you finding that there are specific industries or professions where someone with ADHD thrives in versus other industries where it might not be the best fit for them?
Yeah. So there's no like hard and fast rule, honestly. I can tell you though that my clients, a lot of them are in the creative profession, and a lot of them are entrepreneurs. A lot of them like marketing and sales. So you have artists, you have sales, you have entrepreneurs, you have helping professions like doctors, lawyers, teachers, ER doctors.
So all industries obviously need a problem solver and someone who thinks creatively.
Exactly. The one industry that is pretty challenging for most ADHDers is being an assistant. So assistant has a lot of executive function involved and keeping track with working memory of tasks and then reminding people and then keeping note of it. So yeah, there are some assistants out there that specialize in ADHD and have ADHD, but I find that that's usually challenging for an individual with ADHD.
You mentioned clients and your work with clients. Can you tell a little bit about what you do and how you help as a coach?
Sure. So I've been in the industry for 20 years. I am an ADHD coach. My company, Coaching with Brooke, works with individuals 8 to 80 and parents. And I started as a special education teacher, then moved up the leadership roles to assistant director of special education in the New York schools, school districts. And I wanted to make a bigger difference. I felt like in the administrative role, I really wasn't hands-on with the kids. And that was my passion. So I shifted gears. I moved to Florida and along the way got coached and then met someone who was an ADHD coach and said, hey, you'd be a great ADHD coach. I knew I wanted to be an entrepreneur, but I didn't know specifically what. Did the training, fast forward. Here I am 5 years later with a company of seven other coaches. I have like 12 people working with Coaching with Brooke, and we have helped thousands of individuals with ADHD hands-on in a one-on-one and group coaching environment. We have community. I just wrote a book, Activate Your ADHD Potential, for adults with ADHD. And I'm just excited to see what the future holds.
And as someone with ADHD who has made a career change, what advice would you give to someone who's listening and maybe they're like, I think I could do more with my creativity, with my problem solving skills, all the positive attributes that having ADHD gives you, but I'm not sure how to make a career change. What advice would you give them?
Okay, so how to make a career change, you really have to understand yourself. So it's not like you could do career coaching, but you can also get coached and figure out what your values are, what your strengths are, what your passions are, what your motivation is. Once you start learning those things, then you get a little bit more insight into what really makes you energized. From there, do interviews. Interview your friends. Say, what's the best thing about your job and what's the worst thing about your job? And continue the dialogue and conversation. So it's really exposure. It's really getting to know yourself and then trying different things. Not only do you need to know that, but you also have to know your environment. What is the best work environment for you? Do you like big places to work at or small places? What type of boss would you thrive with? Someone who's a micromanager or someone who gives you space or someone in between? What type of teams and colleagues do you need? So all of those things, do you need in-person or virtual? So all of those are conditions and factors to consider. You might have the perfect role, but not the environment. And very often people leave bosses, right? But not the job itself. So we need to understand what truly drives us and motivates us. And then once we find the job that we want, make sure that you interview people who work there too, so they can give you some background information about the workspace, the boss, find out the turnover rate, all of those things. Culture is very important.
And as we think about bosses, how can someone who has ADHD be a great boss? How can they effectively manage a team while addressing their own challenges?
Being honest with themselves and keeping the conversation open. So I have a team of 12, as I mentioned, and it's not a top-down approach. It's a collaborative approach. We have weekly meetings. We have group meetings bi-weekly. And we talk about any changes that are coming up. So there's no unexpected changes. We collaborate on problems that we might have heard from clients or customers or even from them. So I always say if your employers or contractors are not bringing you a problem, that means that there's a problem, right? That means they don't feel comfortable with you to actually share a problem. So you want and you want to encourage that feedback. As a boss with ADHD, you also want to make sure that they're doing the things that they love and that you're helping them in any way, shape, or form. I have coaches who are amazing coaches, right? And they've been amazing coaches from the beginning, but they have problems writing notes and handing them in on time. So we've created systems together to help them. And, you know, for me, it's like, what is the most important thing that I need from my contractors and the people who work for me? Is it the notes or is it them doing a really good job with their clients, right? So those types of things. I have an assistant who has autism and she does not have ADHD, but she doesn't like getting on the phones. She doesn't like talking to people. So I was putting her in situations where I asked her to do that. It took away from all of the amazing things that she's great at, like the marketing, like creating graphics. She's so good at that. So by figuring out what your ADHD staff or neurodiverse staff or just neurotypical staff thrive in, then you're going to get the best work. You don't want someone doing work that is subpar because they don't enjoy it. They are not good at it. So I think we need to evaluate that as leaders and figure out what our people are best at and how we can work together to harness that.
I love that. I think that advice is really for everyone in any type of position or any type of mental ability or disability. What advice would you have for adults with ADHD who may have difficulties with time management and organization in a professional setting?
So first of all, I would try to immediately, because when things are chaotic and you're in a really bad spot, you kind of just have to do, right? You have to produce, you have to start. So don't take like a deeper look, just get the most important things done and try to get some accountability to do that. Once things start getting off your plate, then you could do a deeper dive into like, do I even like this role? Is there a reason? Like, why am I not finishing these things? Is it actually the time management or is it because I am so turned off by this task or this boss or whatever, right? Is it my optimal focus time for work? Sometimes people don't enjoy waking up early and don't produce well early. So what are my most productive times of the day? How can I break this task down into smaller tasks? What's the first step? What are all the pieces I'm missing that go into this? How can I try to estimate the amount of time that it's going to take? I think it's going to only take this amount of time, a small amount of time, but it's actually 3 hours long, or the 3 hour long tests actually take 5 minutes. So like, how do I get a realistic view of my time? We talk about this in my signature process 3C activation, because when people, that's a big thing. How do I improve my time management? And it starts with getting the things off that you need to get off immediately, but also then taking a look inward and being aware of the things about yourself and asking the difficult questions so you can actually open up yourself to create time management skills for things that actually are of value to you.
I think a lot of what you're saying also has to do with people being honest with themselves, right? Like we grow up and even in our professional careers, we feel like we have to be good at everything. So what you're recommending, which is great advice for anyone that's listening, is be honest about what you don't like doing or what you feel like you're not really good at doing, and spend your time doing the things that you love, doing the things that you're good at, while delegating those tasks to people who are good at that. And that could be writing emails, getting on a phone. So I think the bigger message that I want to emphasize here is that you don't have to be good at everything. And it is absolutely okay at any point in your career to say, I am not good at this, but I have someone on my team who is, and that's what makes a team. And that's why people complement each other in their workplace. And that's okay. I think that's an important message, because people always think that they have to be good at everything, or they have to appear to be good at everything in order to be taken seriously or have those leadership positions.
Yes. And I think there's a lot of pressure that neurodivergent women put on themselves, and then they mask and try to camouflage to be this performer, to appear like they are the hardest worker. And trust me, I've been there, right? Before I was diagnosed with ADHD, I identified as someone who was a hard worker. I wasn't smarter than everyone else. I probably, if I took an IQ test, I probably would be in the average range, but I worked my ass off because I knew that that was something that I could do and that's how I would outperform people. So, but it led to burnout, anxiety, and lots of negative things, sleep problems. Did I get rewarded for it? Yes. But was it the right type of reward? No, because I wasn't able to have healthy relationships, a healthy self-identity, be able to do the things that I love, like play tennis and, you know, really understand myself. So I think, like you said, it's very imperative that you understand yourself so then you could build the confidence to say, I don't need to be good at everything. I can ask for help. And all these things in front of me do not have equal value. I can just do 7 out of 10 of these and still be very productive. And 7 out of 10 of those things could be taking a bath, eating, drinking water, getting your clothes ready the night before. That's okay.
Related to this conversation, what role does self-awareness play in managing ADHD in adulthood? And how can individuals cultivate the self-awareness and being honest with themselves, both for professional and, of course, to your point, for personal growth as well?
I think to find your community of people like you and then learn from what other people are saying, because very often they could be a mirror to what you're experiencing. But almost everyone has a hard time really knowing who they are at the core without asking others and without doing like tests and surveys. So we need to find our people, get some help, whether it be from a friend, a family member, a coach, therapist, whatever. And I think the two blend, because business is not just work efficacy. Business is being whole. If you're not good on the mental level and emotional level and social level, you might not be good in producing and being able to show up every day for work and being responsive and being your best self. So it blends in together. When people work on themselves, all the other buckets of their life come together.
I love that. And related to that question, I follow you on Instagram. And for those who are interested in following Brooke, her handle is at Coaching with Brooke, B-R-O-O-K-E. And she shares phenomenal information. And I'm super interested in content you share because it definitely allows me to have aha moments about me and my self-awareness journey and what I'm trying to discover about myself. You posted about having injustice sensitivity the other day, and that really resonated with me. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So people with ADHD, particularly like inattentive ADHD, are usually more justice sensitive than the neurotypical person. So some of the reasons, and it's not in the DSM-5 that we have justice and sensitivity. So there's a lot of conflict and controversy about this, but possible reasons, and I know a lot of people with ADHD who struggle with this, including myself, include emotional liability, intensity, dysregulation, which are all common symptoms of ADHD. So people who don't have ADHD or are neurotypical might not struggle with this as much. You and I were talking before we got on the podcast, and we have a hard time watching shows where someone is not being treated right. And out of personal experience, I would say, and I'm sure a lot of other ADHDers feel this way, because we have had so many more negative experiences and messages sent to us, we have so much more awareness on an empathetic and emotional level for other people. So I was bullied from age 9 to 35 until I did the work on myself. And many people don't believe that, but that constant bullying and trauma has led me to be so hyper aware of my surroundings that I can almost feel when someone's feeling something and they don't say it.
Yeah, and I'm very sorry that that was your experience. Even in adulthood, you felt bullied.
But you know what? I look back and it all, you know, helped me get to where I am, right? And it helped me become more empathetic for my students and my clients along my path. So yeah, with a lot of therapy and coaching, I have seen the other side, but it's part of my story.
Do you agree that sometimes people don't even realize that they're being bullied when they're in that vulnerable space?
100%. Yes. I think that we very often lack some social awareness and cues. So we put ourselves in more vulnerable situations, not realizing that it's bullying until it's really bad. So thinking people that are our friends who aren't our friends, and we don't understand why they're not our friends. Yeah, it's hard, right?
And as a bystander, as a friend, as an employer, as a boss in the workplace, how can you advocate or support someone who you are witnessing being bullied, even if they're not aware of it?
So as a teacher, I was part of the OVEAS program, which is a social, emotional, academic learning, and it was great. So the power comes from the bystander, like you said, rather than the bully or the one being bullied. It's the other people, because there's way more bystanders than there is the bully and the one being bullied. So I think showing that you are on the side of the one being bullied and creating education in the workplace on how, you know, we're here to support each other, and also sharing accomplishments of people along the way. Not just work performance accomplishments, but like, hey, you did a really great act of service for this person. Like, I'm so impressed. Here's X or whatever. Or just, you know, like, randomly pointing out something along the way, and recognizing that person in front of everyone. Or maybe they don't want that, so maybe just recognizing them in front of a few people. So awareness, education, and recognition.
And is the education part something that you and your coaching team helps workplaces with?
So yes, I've actually done talks to top 10 universities, to school districts, to Chopra Global, Deepak Chopra's global force, I guess you would call it. I've been quoted in several Forbes and Entrepreneur magazine articles to talk about how to overcome people pleasing and how to accommodate yourself in the workplace and overcome social anxiety and how to tell your boss you have ADHD. So yes, these are things that we do. And very often I use my 3C activation process when talking to a workplace to help them understand the invisible disabilities and work with it rather than against it.
And I think if I'm thinking of it from an employer perspective, as someone who leads HR and benefit programs, your services to me could be identified from the utilization reports that our benefit providers obviously give in an anonymous way, where you see if people have certain medication that they're using or certain diagnosis that they have. And from there on, I feel like your coaching and your education could be more of a preventative and management to ADHD.
Correct. Yeah. So I've had a lot, and I continue to have a lot of clients who go through the 3C activation program or get one-on-one coached with that process, and they get paid to do it, or not paid to do it, but we get paid from their boss, because they understand the self-development that comes with awareness and the time management and productivity, the confidence level of these people. So yes, from the boss's level, they very often compensate the journey of coaching, which is awesome. And I think it would also be amazing to have non-ADHD people go through the course as well, or through the program, just to see what it's like the day in the life of.
And where is this program available? Is that someone that an individual could sign up for on your website and build a community around?
Yeah, coachingwithbrookwithane.com. All of our programs are there. If you go to adults coaching, because we do students and adults, you'll see the 3C activation group coaching program. You could also sign up for one-on-one coaching with one of our lovely 8 coaches, and you could sign up right on the site. Or if you want more information to see if you're a good fit, we have a free discovery call with my husband, actually, who does them. And I get on it as well. And we make sure that your needs are customized. So everything is all on our website. The prices are there. There's a video explaining the process. But yes, we have adult coaching in group and one-on-one. And then we also have student coaching, because think about how many students are undiagnosed, unmanaged, and then they get to adulthood and they have all this trauma and resentment and anger and negativity bias. So if we can try to prevent that as much as possible and give them the executive functioning tools at an earlier age, their life can look so much different.
I agree with you. And for those who are listening but are not ready to sign up yet, are there specific mindfulness or coping techniques that you could share with them right now on this podcast for them to be able to handle pressures of workplace or even personal life?
Yeah. So I have a free ebook on my website. It's literally coachingwithbrooke.com/ebook. And it's all about how to focus by focusing your time. So that is a big thing that we go over in the book and in the program as well. We break it down, but in here it's like 21 pages and it goes into tips and tools and strategies of ways to manage your time, ways to be mindful, ways to understand your optimal focus time, ways to create a schedule that works for you, ways to reward yourself. So it's a whole system in there that you can use and go through and modify for your specific ADHD needs. So you could go there, you could go to, you know, Instagram as well. But just in general for mindfulness and meditation, and I spoke about this recently, mindfulness and meditation is not what you think it is, right? Like we with ADHD have this all or nothing mindset very often. And we think that it has to be X amount of time and it has to be in like the yogi position with your eyes closed and you have to sit in a comfortable space. Like it does not need to be that. And it's very hard for individuals with ADHD often to sit and try to focus on a mantra. So literally do anything that you enjoy doing and just focus on that thing. And that's mindfulness. So you can kick a soccer ball and focus on kicking the soccer ball. That's being mindful. You can run, you could swim, you could play tennis, you could look at the trees, you could look at the birds. Like just focusing on one thing is being mindful.
I love that. Those are such great tips. As we wrap this up, my one question for you is, are there misconceptions about ADHD in adulthood that you often encounter? And how do you dispel them? And that could be the person who actually has it judging themselves, right? It's not always our environment. We're always our worst critic as well. So I want to explore both of those instances and how do we dispel those?
Very often when we learn we have ADHD as a child or as an adult, we don't feel good enough. We feel like we're not smart, we're lazy, we're dumb, we just will never be the most popular, the best, whatever. And what I want to dispel is if you lean into your passion and your strengths, and you have a passion, we all have a passion, if you really focus on that, you're going to succeed. So focus on your passion. Be driven towards your passion. And it doesn't matter how well you do in school. Sorry, parents, but it doesn't matter. You know, it doesn't matter how liked you are by everybody. It doesn't matter how good of an author you are, a writer, or in math. Like, it matters how much drive you have and how much passion and how you can follow that passion consistently and persistently along the way. So I want to dispel the fact that like ADHDers are not smart. That's total bullshit. We can actually have really high IQs. It has nothing to do with intelligence and very often high emotional intelligence. We're not lazy. It's that we literally have a brain-based disorder and we have trouble getting started on something that is not interested to us. So we can hypofocus on things. Hypofocus is the opposite of hyperfocus. We can hypofocus on things that are mundane and repetitive and non-interesting to us because we literally don't have the dopamine to do that thing.
Brooke, I'm not sure if you are open to talking about this, but I'm curious as to what your point of view is on the prescription drugs that are for adult ADHD or even for children, the Adderalls, the Ritalins, and all the other ones in the market.
So they work for 80% of the population, and I'm on it, my husband's on it, my children are on it. And I think, you know, of course, they always say pills don't teach skills. So it's not a one-size-fits-all solution. You have to understand tools and what works for your brain and get rid of some limited beliefs and create systems and strategies. But it's a triage effect. I have nothing against medication unless there's a health situation, like you have heart problems. But then even then you can take, you know, beta blockers or something to that extent to also help support your ADHD. But stimulants are like the gold standard for medication. So I don't think negatively about it. In fact, Dr. Barclay said that people who don't take medication and have very unmanaged ADHD can live 13 years less than people who are on it. So it does have a lot of positive benefits. And for me, when I first started taking it, I thought I was just going to try it out because my clients were and I have ADHD and I wanted to see what it felt like and what it would do for me. And I haven't stopped taking Adderall. I'm on a lower dose. I'm on 10 milligrams. I take it once a day, but it helps me, you know, transition my attention. It helps me stay focused a little bit longer on things that I wouldn't have before. It helps me with my working memory. It helps the circuits, like electricity. If you don't have a plug into the wall, you're not going to get electricity, right? You're not, the lamp is not going to work. The computer is not going to work. Medication does that. It's like putting the plug back into the outlet. So your dopamine can be flowing and the synapses in your brain can be connected. Because people with ADHD have an abundance of dopamine or too little dopamine. It's usually never leveled. And what the medication does, it helps with the reuptake and it helps you get dopamine more regularly.
Brooke, you mentioned briefly that you wrote a book. Can you tell us a little bit about your book and how you came to writing it and what you hope to accomplish with people who do read your book and where, obviously, where our listeners can find this book?
Sure. So my book is called Activate Your ADHD Potential, A 12-Step Journey for Adults with ADHD from Chaos to Confidence. And it highlights my 3C Activation Signature Program. And before we get into that, we talk about the 10 disruptors of ADHD. And I coined the 10 disruptors starting with, and it doesn't have to start in any particular order. You could start it at any time, anywhere, sometimes multiple times a day. But low dopamine. Low dopamine often turns into like seeking dopamine, right? We don't like having low dopamine. So we're trying to find this new and exciting idea, which then turns into more dopamine. When we do that, we then hyperfocus on that new and exciting idea. And when we hyperfocus, we often lose concept of time. And when that happens, then we get overwhelmed. Once we get overwhelmed, then we start getting emotionally dysregulated. And when we get emotionally dysregulated, we could have rejection sensitive dysphoria, and then we can compare ourselves to other people. We can have negative self-talk, and eventually burn out and shut down and then get to underwhelm. And then the whole cycle starts over again. So it's like this underwhelm, overwhelm cycle that ADHDers are so often in. When we're underwhelmed, we're bored, we have the low dopamine. When we are overwhelmed, there's so much going on. And either way, we can burn out. So I talk about the science behind that and the concepts behind it and how that can apply to ADHDers. And then from there, I take you through a 12-step program, literally with worksheets. So it's a workbook model to take you from chaos to clarity in 12 weeks. And with that, you get access to my community. So you get accountability, you can body double, you can get support, because this isn't just you're going to read a book, do nothing, and then put it on your bookshelf. This is an active book that you go through to make a huge, big change in your life. So you can find it on Amazon. You can find it anywhere. You could also find it on my website, coachingwithbrooke.com/activate book, or you could just go to coachingwithbrooke.com and then look for the book link and it comes right up. And then make sure to claim your bonuses on the site so you get all the free gifts that come with it, like a free webinar to break down the book, the community. You get the worksheets from the book. You get that for you. So like you could download that and print that out as many times as you want. So you can read you the book, because I know how we are sometimes with writing in books. We don't want to do it because we want to hold on to it. It's our precious material, right? So you can download and print it out. You can get a step of process sheet. So there's lots of really good things with it. And what drove me to writing the book is that our vision as a company is to help 10 million people with ADHD, and not everyone can afford services. And this is a way to give back for a very little price, and you still get access to our community. Also, some people don't know where to start in their journey. So this is a starting point for you. Take a look at this program, go through it. If it resonates with you and you feel like you're getting a lot out of it, then maybe look at our services. Or if you're a coach, a lot of coaches go through this program as well, and they feel like they get a lot of support out of it too. So that's the purpose behind the book. It was also on my bucket list, and I tricked my brain into saying I'm going to write it in 3 days. And that was funny, but I didn't. It took me about 6 or 7 months to do it, but I'm so happy that it's out and it's there and it's impacted thousands of people already.
That's wonderful. And congratulations on your achievement of writing a book.
Thanks. Not easy with ADHD.
I could only imagine. Well, Brooke, thank you so much for these wonderful insights on adult ADHD and for offering people accessible learning and coping tools for those who are either impacted by it or are supporting their loved ones or colleagues with ADHD. And thank you so much for your time on this podcast.
Thank you, Ren. It's so nice meeting you, and thank you for having me.